Of course, we are going to continue on the fourth chapter of Genesis. I left it at the seventh verse, remember? As I said before, I take time in the first four chapters of Genesis, for I find them very, very interesting and helping us as people to understand the mind of God. Not the mind of Cain, not the mind of Adam, not the mind of Eve, but the mind of God. Every word that proceeds out of his mouth is very, very important. And so remember, we left off on the seventh verse, and we went through that, and I'll retell you what it says, basically, in Hebrew. As if thou does well, remember, his offering was not accepted. And Cain, Abel's was. We will go back and do into the New Testament and find out more in detail, but certain key words we must focus in on to find out exactly what was the problem. So here we have here, and he says, will you not be accepted? So his offering wasn't accepted because it was the wrong one. It was because you're not doing well. You're not doing what you are supposed to be doing. And the verse continues on, if you do not do well, sin is at the door. Now, in Hebrew, it doesn't mean this, you don't open it up. It means you've opened up the door. And you've let the sin come into your house, into your home, into your dwelling place. And now he says, now you're supposed to rule over it. And in some words in Hebrew, it says there that, and unto you is sins is its desire. Or basically, you're desiring the sin. You desire to do, the sin is more pleasing to you. You know, and the New Testament backs that up, right? The sin is more pleasing than having to walk in the righteousness of God because, you don't have to obey a bunch of rules. The commandments are no value to you because you don't care about them. You don't care about them, so. In a particular case, now as we read this thing, we're going to find out. I'm going to ask you a question now. What was Cain's sin? Do you know? Where did sin enter? Or when did sin enter? It doesn't tell us when. We just know where. Where did it enter in? Through the door. All right. Yes, Ellie.
Verse 5 says, Cain was very angry and his countenance fell. And the Lord said to Cain, why are you angry and why is your countenance fallen? So it sounds to me like he got mad.
Countenance falling doesn't mean an anger. You're, I know, but be careful about that. Your countenance is falling because it means something is happening. You were basically, he was stunned. We did really get down to that point. Shocked. Of what was taking place. He disagreed with it and he just couldn't accept it. Whether it doesn't say he was angry, doesn't say he was mad. So we can look at it, we can assume that, that's fine. Okay. And he says now, was Cain ruled by sin or was Cain ruling over sin? So did Cain lose control of sin or what? Or was sin taking over Cain and Cain couldn't do anything about it?
Yeah. Cain could do something about it.
Cain could do something about it. Otherwise, he wouldn't say, what's wrong with you, Cain? If you do well, would it not be accepted? The answer would have been yes. So Cain was not in the process of sinning. He was in the process of already being in sin and ruling it. Having it number one priority rather than righteousness. Now be careful. We'll get back into here to know the difference between Cain and Abel. Verse 8. One thing we do not know. In our both in Hebrew and in English, okay, they group these two statements together, but it really is not a statement. First thing says, and Cain talked with Abel, his brother. No one knows what he said. The very next in Hebrew says, and it's translated there in English, as time went by, and they were in the field, then Cain rose up and slew his brother. So we know something there, right? First of all, two things were taking place in this verse. First, Cain slaughtered Abel. We have no idea what he said. We don't know when he said it. We talked last week about why was Cain and Abel offering something to God? You remember I said to you last week, God does not arbitrarily show up in the scene whenever he catches anybody off guard. What happened during the Garden of Eden? What did he say to Adam? Why are you not here, Adam? That's what it says in Hebrew. Why are you not here, Adam? Where was Adam? Why was it important? Something during the look like, oh, I don't know where he's at. I got to hunt him down. I got to go in the forest. I got to take the weeds out. I got to find where he's at. No. God was there at a specific location, a specific time of the cold, cool of the evening. And along comes him. He's there at an appointed time. And Adam wasn't there. And he says, why are you not here, Adam? The same statement we see here in Cain. These were not just 2-year-olds or 3-year-old boys. They were not teenagers. They were grown men. They had always an appointed time to bring something to God on a regular occurring basis. One was a farmer and the other one was a person who raised sheep or goats. Now, what was their tradition? Bringing something to him at a specific point in time, at a specific location. Very important to know about the location. We'll get to that in a minute. We don't know where it's at. Doesn't matter. We just know that God showed up on the scene, and these men were accustomed to giving an offering. Now, what the place? Well, at this particular point in time, we don't know how old they were, but they were not children, they were grown men, that Cain, because what he was doing was not well. That's what it says in Hebrew. He was not doing well. He's not doing good. He's not doing that which is right. He's not doing that which just God wants him to do. What did Abel do? He was doing well. He was doing what God wanted him to do. He was doing that which is good, that which is right, that which is proper. Why is he called the righteous one? Because he was righteous. Right? No one can be righteous because I want to be righteous. You're only righteous because you're doing what God is having for you to do. When you do what God is having you to do, now you get to be called righteous. If you don't do what God wants you to do, you cannot be called righteous. People could call one another righteous. It means nothing. Here, we're looking here, that Cain was righteous. Very important to know the difference between the two men. Let me ask you another question. How many times have you heard said, or may have heard said, I don't know you from Adam? How many of you heard, you're raising Cain? Right? Now, in the book of, I think it's Romans, I may be wrong, Corinthians, there is an individual that was compared to Adam. Who was the individual that was compared to Adam? Yeshua. Is there anybody in the Bible that's compared to Cain? A lot. Yes, you had a David?
It was me. It reminds me of when King Saul says, where's David? because it was the new moon. He was supposed to be there. God knows you're supposed to, people know the Moedim are there. You're supposed to turn up.
Right. It's like what God says. You know, we already have it from the Torah, that, good thing I was over there. that God has, always has had, the first book of Genesis tell you that, he always has a scheduled time. God has appointments for us, does he not? Everything Shabbat is an appointment. If we don't show up, it's like God saying, why are you not here? Okay, same statement he said to Adam, right? And so you say, well, I had this wonderful fishing thing. I had to go fishing today. Well, okay. What else did you do? Well, I had to go to the store and had to buy food because I had no food in my house and my I have guests coming. Oh, really? Remember the Messiah said about somebody? He says, oh, let me go and buy, have a new house, you know. Let me go dedicate it. And he says, no, no. Your appointment now is with me. And the guy says, no, I'm going to go do it. There's no more. So that's just how we have to look at life and notice it. Now, as we compare, I know the people have this thing that he gave the wrong offering. This has to do with Hebrews. Go to Hebrews 11th chapter and verse 12 for a moment. Hebrews 11, verse 4, I'm sorry. Now, many of you have heard from both Jeff many, many times that in Greek, when the word of it translated faith, it doesn't mean, I have faith it's going to rain tomorrow. No. Oh, I have faith the sun's going to come up tomorrow. Oh, I have faith I'm going to sleep tonight. That's not what it says. Something happening? Okay. Anyway. He says, by faith, Abel offered unto Elohim a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, by which he obtained witness that he was righteous. Did you get down and say what it says? It's in Hebrews, the 11th chapter, verse 4. And so we're saying, that people are like, oh, see what? It was the gift that was wrong. Let's backtrack here. Because there are two more places in the New Testament I want to go to. Change the word faith to what it says in Greek. Trust. Because Abel trusted God, his gift was more excellent. As we read in Cain, he didn't, something was wrong with it because he wasn't doing well. And guess what happened to his offering? In Hebrew, it wasn't even looked at. God didn't even look at it. But he said, if you had done well, if you'd done good, I would have looked at it. I would have taken it. But it's you. Now let's go to 1 John. 1 John chapter 3. And verse 12. Not as Cain, who was of the wicked one, and slew his brother, and wherefore slew him? Why did he do it? Because his faith wasn't there? What wasn't there? His works. He slew his brother because his works were not right. Does that agree what it says there in Genesis? If you do well, if you do that which is right, would it not have been accepted? It's what you were doing, Cain, because of your works is the reason why you killed your brother. All right? Simple as that. Now let's go to Jude. Book of Jude. Verse 11. He's talking generally to an awful lot of people who are being compared now. with Cain. He says, woe unto them, for they have gone the what? The way of Cain. So you see, when we're looking back at Genesis, and it looks like it was the offering that was a mistake. No, it wasn't, because we see there in Genesis, he says, if you do well, I would have accepted your offering. Otherwise, God's a liar, right from the very beginning. But see, he already was doing something that was not right. And he killed his brother because he was already doing something that was not right. Sin was already in his house. Sin was already crossed over the threshold, the threshing floor, and walked across there, the threshold. He welcomed it in. What he did, the Bible doesn't tell us. All it says here that his works were evil or his works were bad. Not accepted. His works, just like it says there in Genesis, the fourth chapter. So let's go back to Genesis now. And verse 6, and Yahweh said unto Cain, why are you wroth? Why are you upset for? What are you mad for? And why is thy countenance fallen? Verse 7. If thou well, would it not be accepted? Yeah, it would be accepted. All right. Let's go to verse 9. Well, before we go there, remember, it was Cain was the first one to show up with the offering. Then Abel showed up with his. Because why? Why? Firstborn sets the stage. Remember, take note of the timing. There was an appointed time there. Now we're in verse 9. And now God says something else. And Yahweh said unto Cain, here's that word where. I told you in Hebrew, these are two places in the book of Genesis that it should not read the word where. It should be, why is Abel not here? Why is Abel not here? So he had an appointed time with Abel, as he did with Cain. Right? Now, we're assuming, because this has to happen sometime near, because it comes to pass. We don't know how the first incident, and it wasn't the next day, more likely it was the next time, the appointed time was, which could have been. We don't know how long ago it was. We don't know if it was a year later, 6 months later. We don't know anything about that. All we know that they had to show up again for an offering to give unto God. And Abel wasn't there. And then what was his answer? I'm not supposed to attend his wares. I'm not supposed to take care of him. Now with an attitude like that, what do you think God said?
Go to your corner.
I actually did a lot more than go to your corner. That's very, very, important. I want to show you a picture, best way you can picture in your mind what was taking place during this particular point in time. Because I understand something. The story of Cain is related more to how we live our lives than the story of Abel. We have all sorts of reasons for not doing what God wants us to do. Weak, sin, transgression, anger, frustration, upsetness, disappointment, countenance falling, getting anger. All that thing is related to Cain, right? So mankind, in a sense, is raising Cain.
Because I have been struggling this year with my low self-esteem and my confidence and my shame and guilt, blah, 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 my past. And I've been praying diligently about this. And it comes to going to church for me. It's going to come down to keeping the Sabbath. My family has been, who all of you know, don't keep the church and the rules and the way we believe, but my family has been making way for me to go to church every day, making the car available to me, making sure that I have what I need to keep the Sabbath. And I've been trying to keep the Sabbath for the last couple weeks, and I have had no problem. And it came down to, in a silly little thought rolling around in my head, if you don't have time for God, when is God going to have time for you?
Well, that's what's right. I said this before, right? I'll repeat myself again. You remember the story of the sower? Now, does God spend more time with the people who are in the highways and the byways? Or does God spend more time with the people who are amongst the rocks and nothing grows? As God spends a lot of his time amongst the thorns and thistles for people who are of all troubles of the world? Or does God spend more of his time with 100-fold, 60-fold, and 30-fold? I think you got your own answer, right? So if there's any thorns or thistles or rocks or hard ground, it's not because God doesn't want you there. He said, you've got to do something to your soil. You've got to change your soil. I'm not going to do it. It's your job. You know? And we don't look at it in that way. Now, verse 10. Now, Elohim said, what have you done? The voice of thy brother's blood cries unto me from the ground. What was the voice saying? What was it crying? It says that according to the Torah, it was in the blood's voice, not in Abram's voice. It wasn't in Abram's soul voice. It wasn't in Abram's spiritual voice. It was in the voice of the blood. That's pretty heavy stuff, don't you think? And so we're looking at this thing really slow. Okay, piece of cake, we understand, yeah. God knew he killed him, all right? And we know that according to Scripture, life is in the blood of the animal. And life is also in your life and your flesh, because without blood, You can't get food in. You can't, all the food you put in your belly would never go anywhere because your body has teared up. The blood takes it to nourish the rest of the cells that's in your body, including their own cells. So what was the blood saying? Yes?
You said Abram. Did you mean
Abel. Abel. Okay. I'm sorry. Now I'm asking a question. I always ask these questions myself. What was the blood saying? No, this is my thinking. Take it or leave it. I don't care. I can tell you what I'm thinking here. Sin overpowered righteousness. Really? Did it really overpower righteousness? Yes, it did. Cain killed the righteous man. The righteous now is in the grave. He's in the ground, and there's nothing more. Does sin have power? If you transgress, if you break the Torah, or you break the law, you transgress a friend, are you not destroying that which is right? Are you not stopping that which is right? Aren't you having the ability and the power to alter that which should be done right? Yes, you do. I will tell you one more thing. Nothing in the Torah I have ever seen or ever heard, nor in the prophets, nor in the writings, where God says, you know, I know you, it wasn't you that really did it. It was the devil. Or it was a demon. I was insane. It was that marijuana you took, and now you didn't thinking right, right? What? Bible doesn't give you, the eternal doesn't give you the cop out. Now, we know this, righteousness of Abel remained in the ground. But, what does Scripture say? Well, it does say there in Hebrews that his righteousness is still speaking. What is his righteousness? How is Abel's righteousness still speaking? Do you know what Abel did? Do you have any evidence whatsoever of the life of Abel? Do you know how he was? He grew up. Is there a story about him doing a great, awesome thing? Nothing. Totally blank. All it says there tells us what Cain was not doing well. That must mean that Abel was doing well. Right? Process elimination, a comparison of the two statements. So we're at this point now. Let's go to verse 11. I had a very, very fascinating here. Was there anything else I want to add there? Yeah, I want to say one more thing. In Hebrews 13th chapter, you don't have to turn there if you don't want to. So therefore, Yahshua also, that he might sanctify the people with his own blood, suffered throughout the gate, or with outside of the gate. I want to choose that phrase because, see, he wasn't killed inside the gate. He wasn't killed within the doors of the temple or in the doors of Jerusalem. He was killed outside of it. Right? Now, where was Abel killed? Out in the field. Very important knowing he was not at the appointed place when he was killed. He was killed outside from and separate from the place where God was to have them meet him. Did you understand what I'm saying so far? Let's go on farther here. Back Genesis verse 4. Now this is Elohim talking, and he says, and now, cursed from the earth. Oh, didn't he do that to Adam too? This is a different kind of a curse. Is paralleling it? Yes. What was the curse that Adam received? Worthless plants are going to come up and always trouble you, and you have to keep on getting rid of the worthless plants. What's called thorns and thistles? It's a phrase that's not translated in Hebrew because no one knows what it means, but they have an idea that refers to some kind of plant that has no value. Lots of it, you know. You ever heard of weeds? You ever find a plant in a garden? There's a lot of weeds there, right? So that's what we have. Curse of Adam, maybe. But anyway, we'll go here now. And he says, now, which has opened her mouth, the earth, to receive your brother's blood from your hand. Verse 12. When thou tills the soil, it shall not henceforth yield to you her strength. He didn't say that to Adam. He said it to Cain. What was Cain's livelihood? Planting things, growing things from the ground up. That was his offering to God on a regular basis. And all of a sudden, because he was not doing well, God says, you will not receive anything of value from the earth again, because your brother's blood is in the earth. Do you understand what I'm saying? Does that make sense to you? I hope so. But very fascinating. He says, and he says, it shall not interfere. A fugitive and a vagabond shall you be in the earth. Interesting. A fugitive. Now remember that movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
A fugitive. Yeah. Always running. Quote, he was innocent, you know, but not Cain. He wasn't innocent. He was found guilty. And because he was found guilty, guess what he had to do? Run for his life. Literally. We'll get into the names of his sons later. Now, here's a very famous statement. And it's very interesting. We should kind of carefully look at it. And Cain said unto Yahuwah, my punishment is greater than I can bear. Behold, thou hast driven me out from this day, from the face of the earth, and from thy face shall I be hid. It shall be a fugitive and a vagabond on the earth. And it shall come to pass that anyone that finds me will do something to me. Now kill me. Right? Now, let me ask you a question. Was the punishment, now very carefully in English here, was the punishment more than he could bear? Do you know what that word punishment means in Hebrew? Perversity. Depravity. Inequity. What I have done is more than I can bear. More. It was great. The same word that we have here, translated as punishment, is the same one we have for the Day of Atonement. What does it say? Three things Messiah takes away. What is it? Sins, transgressions, and punishment, or inequities, lawlessness, deliberately violating and doing something that is, quote, not just bad, but evil. Killing your brother. Was it more? But God says, you know, that's it. There are other translations which I want to kind of, yes.
It doesn't have any kind of understanding in the word for punishment that gives the word regret of any kind, that he had any kind of burden for what he did.
No, it doesn't say here in this particular chapter at all. I'm not found anything in there. Now, there are other places that I will talk to you about this word punishment. Let's, just for the fun of it, let's go to Leviticus 26, verse 41. Talking about the people. Leviticus 26, verse 41. The same word here is used here for punishment in Cain's. It's also used for inequity on the Day of Atonement. And the word in some of your translations translate it differently because it's hard for them to come up with a good answer. The old King James uses the word punishment here. But I'm going to use a different translation. Part in verse 41. And that I also have walked, contrary to them, and God has said, go contrary to them, and have brought them into the land of their enemies. If their uncircumcised heart is humbled, and they accept their guilt, punishment, or iniquity, they have to take the responsibility. It didn't belong to anybody else. The devil didn't make them sin. They chose to do so. They chose to go contrary. Just as Cain chose to go contrary. And guess what God does when iniquity shows up? According to the Torah, somebody's got to pay the price. Right? All due respect. What did John say? Behold, there comes the Lamb that takes away the sins of the world. Is it possible, though we can't stand Cain, horrible, wicked, evil man, could he possibly do it for Cain?
I'm looking at this context here from verse 13 here in Genesis. So he's saying that my iniquity is greater than I bear. Is this a moment where now he's remorseful finally?
Yes, he's at this point of not only fear of God, also he's afraid of one more thing. We have to go back to this particular chapter. Something else that God, that Cain said, that we need to pay attention to. And very, very fascinating. To watch and pay attention to what be. I find when I find him being attentive, what he said, he's just taking and he's accepting, I'd use that terminology, as what God said to the people of Leviticus. If you are an uncircumcised heart and accept the punishment or accept the responsibility, accept what has to be paid for. Are you willing to do that? If you say yes, now pay for it. Now we're at here. We're in verse 14 still? I think we're still 14, aren't we? Okay, let me read that again. He said, from thy face shall I be hid. Not the interesting terminology. Yes, it could mean the other way around, that he is going to hide his face from God. You cannot hide from God. God always finds you. He knows where you're at. But God is going to no longer look on him. Do you think that's pretty heavy?
Yeah.
I'll pay attention to what's happened to Cain. Though maybe you haven't murdered anybody. When there is inequity in your world, what is God going to do? Not look upon you. We have those sayings we have in the latter part of the day. You know, let the countenance come and fall upon me. I want God's counters to fall upon me. I really do. And if I don't do, and I am contrary to what he wants, he's not going to look at me at all. Now, is that not something to be terrified of? Is that not something when he says you must have the fear of God in you? You must fear the Lord? Because you want him to look at you. With his countenance upon you, not against you, but upon you, yes.
There's something in Cain in his repentance is still self-serving. From the translation, there's really no regret for killing the brother. There's just regret for the consequences levied upon him.
Oh, yes, yes. That's people do. Do not we fall in the very same pattern?
Yeah.
I'm sorry I got caught, for crying out loud. I wish no one knew about that. But guess what? Everybody knows what Cain did. Let me ask you a question. Does everybody know what you did? No. Well, blessed be God that he does that to you. But see, we have to work out your own what?
Salvation.
With what?
Fear
and trembling. Fear and trembling? Why not to work out your own faith with love and compassion and endurance and loving people and cherishing people and doing good to people? No, that's not salvation. No deliverance from that comes from there. Don't need to be delivered from that, right? Enough said. But he made one more saying. And let's go, I think it's verse 15. Genesis 4:15. He says, and Yahuwah said unto him, therefore whoever slays Cain, vengeance shall be taken upon him, and it says sevenfold. Wow. What was Cain cursed with? You forgot already? What was he cursed with? The ground was not going to produce for you anything worthwhile. The strength is over with for you. Wow. Seven times? If you kill him? I mean, what do you live in, a desert? Nothing's going to grow there, right? Whatever. Maybe in Antarctica? Nothing's going to grow there either. You know, so you know, you don't want to mess around with that one. And so, of course, it says he put a mark upon him. That he was to slay him, we'll know what's going on. Now, verse 16, very interesting here. And Cain went out from the face of Yahuwah. He dwelt in another land. It was on the eastern side of Eden. Remember Eden?
Yeah.
Never know what's going to come out of people. No. All right. So we know that Eden was what? The most pleasant place, right? And it had a border around it. Remember its border? The border was called a what? A garden. Hebrew word for fence is garden. We translated it into garden, but it's a fence. There were how many entranceways were to the garden? 20, 30, 40, 50?
One.
What would happen if you tried to enter it? You're toast. Anyways, you're burnt up. It's goodbye. And the fire was going all which directions. You couldn't sneak behind it, sneak over it. You couldn't go around it. You couldn't go left. You couldn't go right. You couldn't under. It was all over the place. Now, where did Adam live after he was taken out of the garden? In the land where he was formed from. In the field next to Eden. Now Cain is even kicked out of that land. Farther east. Now, remember, just as Adam speaks of hiding from Elohim, in a sense, God is now, quote, hiding himself from Cain. What, did God leave? No. Get out of here, Cain. I don't want to see you again. Is that not heavy? Is that not hard? Would you want God to say that to you? Do you know that God can say that to you?
Yeah.
That's why the story of Cain is in the Bible. That's why it's the fourth chapter of Genesis. It's teaching us. What did the Apostle Paul say? It's there for what reason? Our admonition. Our understanding. It's given us wisdom. Right? It's not there because we have a bad guy named Cain. Kill his brother. Let's get on to the fifth chapter. I spent a lot of time telling us in detail about this man. Not about Abel. How many would love to know the story of Abel? And God says, no, you ain't. I'm not going to tell you that one. Because that's not the one I want you to hear. I want you to hear this little over here called Cain. I want you to understand the same thing is going to happen to you that I had to do to Cain if you don't do something. Yes. Yes. Well, obviously, but that's past history, yes.
With this, what Paul says, being turned over to a reprobate mind.
Yes, boy, void of understanding. You can reach that point, yes. But you know, you're out of the face. You're sent out from the face of Elohim. It says present there in English. It means the face. You're looking right at him. You're face to face with him. You're used to always going to him, always being at that point in time. You're there, and now he doesn't want you there anymore. Has God ever said that to the house of Israel? Yes. What has God done to the house of Israel? Sent them away. What did he do to the house of Judah? Sent them away. What is he going to do with you? Okay. You see the story, the parallel? The story is always at the beginning, tells us the story at the end. Right? One more time. Of course, says, you know, Cain knew his wife and so on and so forth. And they had born certain kids and all that kind of stuff. But let's go quickly. I want to finish this particular chapter over with. In verse 16, he says, he went to the land of Nod. You know what Nod means? Huh? Vagrancy. Nothing there. Vagrancy. Nod. A fugitive. So he went to a land. He was out of the land that his mom and his dad were. Out from the land where all his brothers and sisters were. Out from the land from everything he knew. To a place that is a nothing. the land will not yield forth the good things anymore for him. Wandering. And that's what he did. He says, you'll be wandering. What did Jesus, what did the Messiah say? I mean, what did Yeshua say? Yahweh say? You will be a vagabond. You'll be running. And he understood what that meant. Somebody's going to catch up with me, and somebody is going to kill me. And so God says, run for your life. I'll get the man who gets you, but you're going to run for the rest of your entire life. What a curse. He says, you'll wander. And he says, that's what he did. Okay? Now, Cain had a son. Yes?
Isn't that, though, kind of a picture of us also? Because we're guilty. Blood rescued us. And we run for our life the rest of our life. Because at any point in time, we turn back to that. Or we go back to what was. We're back where we started. So
For
the rest of our life, we've got that potential.
If we choose to do that, was there an out for Cain? Doesn't look like it. I find it very fascinating that read the names. The first name, his first son, is what? Hanuk. Have you ever heard of Hanukkah? Or Hanukkah? Dedication. His first son was named Dedication. Now, is this son a bad dedication? Or was he a good dedication? We don't know anything about it. I would say this, my personal, Richard H. Pert opinion, this son was probably born before he killed his brother. My personal belief. Or not belief, but thinking. It could be that way. And then, he had a son. The dedicated one had a son. Now, his son's name was different. You know what he named his son? Which means fugitive. His own son had to also flee. Doesn't say why. I find that interesting. Interesting. And then he had a son. What was his son's name? Mahu Yael. That means what? Blotted out by Elohim. Ooh, that's lots of nasty. That's not a very good name, is it? And then he had a son. And what was his son's name? No, different version. No. Different line. Remember, there's no age. There's no ages given at the line of Cain. There is no age. No one knows how long they lived. No one knows when they died. No one knows anything about them. These are just the names that God has put before us to look at the name and say, what is the picture we are seeing here? All right? Now, in the next book, which is from the line of Seth, and what does Seth mean? Replacement one. The one has been replaced. And Eve named him that because he was to replace the righteousness of Abel. Simple as that. Not hard to figure it out. His name really means who is of Elohim. So now one, there's a third, fourth grandson down the line. So it's not all a line of Cain were turned against God. Just, well, we have the first one and maybe this one that didn't turn against God. Now, he had a son. And his name was Lamech. What does that mean? A powerful, strong man. No, he was just telling me about his son. His Hank was talking about his son. His son's going to be one tough guy. It's already strong, you know. Now, an interesting thing about this, that this guy had two wives. Why is that so important? Why are they? Now, do you know what their names mean? One means dawn, the other means dusk. Odd name for women, right? But one of them women, the one that was dawn, had a son. And what was that son's name? Jubal. Which means stream of water. Stream of water? Where does that fit? And he had a brother also. Name is so much alike you can't even tell the difference between them if you didn't see there was another letter there. It just means stream. One brother was called stream of water, that was called stream. Now, when you think of water, what do you think of? Cleanliness, purity, trying to clean oneself up. Is that what? Now, with all that being said, Zelda also had a son, the one that's in the dusk. All right? What was his name? Tubal Cain. What on earth does Tubal Cain mean? You're just like Cain. You're just like Cain. The guy, you know, way back started. You're going to be brought to the very same place Cain has been brought to. So it wasn't a very pleasant one. But the odd thing, which I find very fascinating here, this man had a daughter. Did you notice that? All the rest were sons, 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 sons. This one has a daughter. It's the last one listed. Last one listed. Do you know what the daughter's name means? Means what? Loveliness or pleasant. So it kind of tells you that the very last name in the line of Cain, which is not a very positive line, the very last name tells you a prophecy. Does it not? It's going to come out at the end. Just the way, and God will purify it. Dedication. Someone had to be dedicated. It was a Messiah. Right? Yes. Two streams of water. One stream of water, and then the water. Cleanliness. Purification. Now, I know that this is only my thinking. I'm finished with this chapter. I hope you accepted it. But there's something that I find very fascinating. I cannot prove one way or the other. I'm just saying how I read things. And I could be reading it wrong. But I find it very fascinating in the book of Revelations. We know what took place in Revelations, right? I mean, in Genesis. And it goes up to the time of Noah, right? And a great flood. Great deluge. By the way, I know some of you are new here, but the word in Hebrew, it says El Shaddai. Shaddai comes from the verb, the one who brought forth the deluge, brought forth the flood. This is the reason why it says, Abraham knew me as the one who brought forth the flood and killed everybody. All right? I don't know if some of you know that, but Revelations, I think it's the 20th chapter. Yes. In verse 21, it's talking about the great white throne judgment. We know about that. It's the 20th chapter of Revelations. I find it very fascinating the way it is written in a specific order. The first one in verse 13 is what? Oh, the sea gives up the dead first. Really? Do we think of just military men or pirates that were lost at sea? Are we picturing perhaps something what the Messiah says, a great deluge took place. Just like the first world is going to be resurrected first to have the judgment put upon them and they will see. You understand what I'm saying so far? And the next one, very funny. And then he says death. Third one. What is death? Is it the sea? The same thing. You're dead. You die. Your death is death. Or what is death? Second thing in line. Third thing in line is Hades. Aren't they all the same? And very important here, it's separated into three different categories. What is Hades? The grave. Well, we know what the sea is. We know what Hades is. It's in the dirt. It's in the dirt. Right? Where's death? Huh? People that were not killed in the sea and people who were not buried in the earth. Where are they? What happened to kill? You get burnt up. You're full of ashes. Okay, that's it. What if you're beaten by a mountain lion? Okay, there's no grave for you, and there is no sea for you. You're just dead. I find that fascinating. And so, I don't know if this is really true or not. I just find it very fascinating, those three things you listed. Everything down there is three. Something tells me something in three, and it has to do with the Messiah.